Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
Always working on new projects. I've got a couple of books working right now. But yeah, I got involved in this field many years ago. Let's see, it was 1986. I was pretty young, 21. Heard a report on the news about a sighting over Alaska. And I was skeptical. I did not believe in UFOs. But hearing about this pilot who saw a UFO over Alaska, it intrigued me enough to start asking people I knew. And boy, did I get a shock when I found out my brother had seen a UFO with his friends. I had two sister-in-laws who had seen UFOs or had face-to-face encounters with actual ETs. I had friends who had encounters, people at work. So it literally hit home for me. And that's when I started buying books about UFOs, attending conventions. I joined MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, became a field investigator, and really never looked back. Started writing articles, wrote about 30 articles before I put out my first book. That was 10 years into researching. And yeah, now putting out books one after another.
And are you still a MUFON investigator, Preston?
I am. I work mostly independently, but I do still speak at various MUFON groups and do support the organization. I am a member. But yeah, I do most of my work independent. And I'm doing this full time now, so I'm super excited. I've had to work really full-time for most of my life doing bookkeeping and data entry and accounting and this sort of thing, but not now. Now I'm doing this full-time.
I hear you. That's got to be exciting, man, to really do what it is you truly love, you know, and make a living off of that. I wanted to ask you, like, when you say you work for MUFON, are you still, like, if people see something, are you still taking reports and looking into things, or what are you doing exactly for MUFON?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do support the organization. I support stuff to MUFON. They're the largest citizen organization. They've had their problems like all UFO groups do in terms of, you know, government infiltration, I guess would be a way of putting it.
Yeah.
They've had some leadership problems over the years, which, you know, is unfortunate. There are some people who are really not happy with the organization. And I understand that, but I have to give kudos to anyone who's willing to be in this field and work through the disbelief, the ridicule, and all the controversy that surrounds researching UFOs.
Are you, what area are you working, or what state, or do you get your reports from and look into?
Oh, all over the world, really, which is really cool. You know, I was initially based in California. So that's why I did get a lot of my reports early on. But now I hear from people, oh, it's really exciting all across Europe, Russia, China, Africa, all across South America, England, of course, Canada. I don't know if there's any area of the world I haven't interviewed somebody from. And I'm certain there are countries out there where I haven't. But yeah, Australia, New Zealand, I've interviewed people there, of course, remotely. I don't have the capacity to travel all over the world. There's not a lot of money in this field, as you may know. Don't make a whole lot off my books, but it's starting to do a little better now that I've got so many of them out there.
That's good. That's really good. So, but are you able, like, if it's close enough for you to actually go out and take a look and see if you could see something or kind of come to some type of conclusion as to whether or not it was a genuine UFO sighting? Are you able to do that for nearby places that you may be able to go to?
Oh, yeah. Whenever possible, I will go to the location, interview the person face-to-face. I especially love that if someone reports, say, a landing, a UFO landing or something, which has happened.
Oh, wow. But, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty rare because I do hear from people all over the world now. So it's, I just don't have that ability. But absolutely, there are ways to get corroboration because I do have access to a large database and I've learned how to do my research now over the years.
What about getting like some cool unedited video or some video that you feel like is genuine or some genuine photographs and things like that?
That does happen. Absolutely. People send me their stuff and say, you know, I just took this the other night. And what do you think of it? I'm not a photo expert by any means, but certainly having viewed these kinds of things for years, you start to get a feel for what's genuine and what's not. Because there is so much Photoshop stuff going on and fakery in this field. If you go on the Facebook groups, it's horrendous. So I am not really interested in footage unless a person is willing to stand behind it and say, you know, I have to have a testimony attached to it. Otherwise, it's not that useful.
Yeah. Or if it's released by some type of organization. But let me ask you that. Is there an organization besides MUFON? Maybe they have some type of department or something that takes in these videos supposedly, and maybe they, you know, go over them and see if they, you know, are legitimate, and then they release them back out into the public with the stories behind them.
Yeah, well, there are people who do specialize in that. What is his name? It's escaping me now, but he's a photo analyst. I've sent him a few things every now and then. It's pretty rare.
Been on TV. He wears glasses. Does he wear glasses?
If I could just think of his name. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Maybe I'll try to look him up, but go ahead.
There's the National UFO Reporting Center. That's another big organization. We've got, of course, our government forming all kinds of groups, but I don't trust them. They've just recently formed the AARO, which is the Aerial Anomaly Reconnaissance Office.
You got to be kidding me, Preston. No way.
Yeah, this is being finally given some legitimacy in the mainstream media, but unfortunately.
Yeah, supposedly, but everybody knows they're trying to. I think personally, they're trying to hijack the narrative, you know, kind of steer it where they want it to go. I don't know what the reason is behind it, but they've got footage of all kinds of things that they're never going to release to us.
100%. They've even admitted it, you know, because John Greenwald, who runs the Black Vault website, he's an expert in Freedom of Information Act requests and has tried over and over again to get certain footage and say, yeah, we have it. We're not releasing it. Which is funny to me because there are these recent congressional hearings and they're showing some footage, but I've seen much better footage in some of these reality TV shows, which I think is legit. I mean, there was not too long ago, 2007, 2008, 2009, some footage taken in the area of Turkey, which has really set the whole UFO community on fire because, man, that footage is probably the best I've ever seen.
What was the footage of?
A gentleman had a very high quality movie camera and filmed the saucer shaped object, which was some distance away, but he had zoom capabilities and he was able to close up on this thing and you could see the actual beings inside the craft.
Yeah. The little alien guys.
Right.
Sitting aside. Yeah. Wow. That was incredible. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And they've never been able to debunk it. It's been legitimized by several groups who have studied it, you know, looking for any evidence of hoax, which there is none. It's great footage.
Unbelievable. So for the, you said it's the UFO reporting. What is that called again, Preston? UFO reporting something?
Yeah, the National UFO Reporting Center.
Okay. And are they releasing footage where we can see like footage or photos or video or anything
like that? Okay. Yeah, you can go to their website and see some pretty interesting photos. I wish there was more money, time, and attention being put forth towards this phenomena. Those are the two main groups here in the U.S., MUFON and NUFORC. But we really need more research done on this subject. Because there is evidence. I understand there are skeptics out there, but I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude. If you're skeptical of this phenomenon, if you don't believe it, you really haven't done your homework. The evidence is there.
Right. Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of fakery, but there's a lot of legitimate, genuine sightings and things and evidence that they leave behind whenever, like you said, whenever they're able to get a landing, you know, a landing's witnessed by people, you'll see where it's actually, you know, made some type of disturbance on the grass or burned it in some type of way. And it usually has some type of phenomena like electromagnetic things are going on around it. Have you come upon anything like that? I mean, if you come upon, I don't know if you've been lucky enough to actually go out to a sighting where someone says it actually landed, but I mean, before I ask you that, have you actually been to a place where one landed somewhere?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I haven't had the good fortune of seeing what I would call absolutely compelling proof firsthand, but I certainly studied it in depth. And I know of many cases, hundreds literally, involving UFO landing traces where the ground has been heated to several thousand degrees and the sand is glassified, or there's indentations in the ground indicating that an object that is quite heavy, yeah, you know, pushed, you know, holes in the ground or on railroad tracks. There was a very famous case in France involving that where it was clear the object was tons. I mean, very heavy.
And it landed on railroad tracks?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. The Trans-en-Provence case in France. It's very well known.
Any pictures online that we can see that they took of that? Or?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know when it happened, but what year was that? Do you know, Preston?
Oh, gosh. Don't quote me on this, but I believe that was 70s, early 70s.
Okay. Okay.
But there are a lot of cases. There was a case in Valençol, France, at a lavender field, where a farmer, Maurice Mass, was missing his flowers. Someone was picking them. And finally, he found out who it was when a UFO landed and started picking his lavender flowers. But it left this huge burn mark on the ground. This is another really good example of landing traces that you can look up online.
That is amazing. Thank you for saying that. I'm definitely going to look that up. But when you were able to actually go out yourself, you said you've been to a place or two where a landing supposedly took place. Were you able to take any type of measurements to see if there's any kind of electromagnetic disturbances or anomalies in that area?
No, I haven't. I have seen what looked like crushed circles of grass and things like that. So in terms of like just measuring it, but in terms of like getting a radiation readings or anything like that, no, not personally. I know of many cases. It's not that unusual.
Man, I could just go on and on with you. Okay, so we're going to talk about your book. It's called Symmetry, A True UFO Adventure. I had not heard of this at all. Not even this person. Preston, how did you come across this particular experiencer?
Yeah, I'm often contacted by people because I am out there. You know, I have a website and I'm on podcasts and television occasionally and my books. And Dolly Safran is the name of the witness. She's a former nurse, worked at the Department of Defense at one point, and a really good witness. She reached out to me on the internet to share her story, and was very, like many witnesses, quite wary at first, reluctant to talk about some of the more personal details of her case, because it is quite extensive. But as we got to know each other, we built up the trust, and I did I'm not even exaggerating, hundreds of hours of interviews with her, because her case is absolutely, hands down, the most extensive I've ever investigated. And she has an enormous amount of evidence. She sent me films, photos, medical evidence, corroborating witnesses. I got to meet her face to face, saw the UFOs myself. So her case is just off the charts amazing.
And the book is really great. People have to go out and get the book. It's just crazy. I imagine you couldn't, there's no way you could possibly put everything in the book. Every little thing that she experienced in the book. Maybe I'm just putting words in your mouth, but it seemed like she had a ton of experiences. What was it quite a bit that you couldn't put in, or were you picking and choosing exactly what to put in, or how did that process go for you? Or was she telling you what she wanted you to use for the book?
No, I mean, you're right. There's just no way we could fit it all in. She's now in her 60s. She's been a fully conscious contactee since age 14. And by that, I mean, does not need hypnosis to recall her experiences. From age 14 onwards, she was having experiences weekly. So we're talking thousands of experiences. That's not an exaggeration. So no, there was no way I could put it all in the book. And that proved to be really challenging because there was so much there. And with so many hours of interviews, it became clear that the first book is not going to be able to cover it all. I'm hoping to put out another one soon, if not this year, certainly by next, because yeah, there was a lot.
This is going to be a continuation of her experiences, right?
Right, right. But the first one is sort of an introduction to her experiences. We did cover quite a bit. Her main experience at age 14, how it developed in her early childhood, and the highlights. But yeah, every time I talk to her, I learn something new. And I mean, just the amount of information is mind-boggling. She was really able to answer a lot of the questions I myself had about the phenomena.
Really? Okay. That's interesting. Let me see where I want to start with you. Well, let's just start from the beginning. I'm really interested to hear, if you don't mind, telling us where she actually grew up and about her first experience. When she was 14.
Yeah, she grew up in Florida, in a rural area in the Florida Everglades. For the most part, she did move around a lot. She comes from a military family, and her father is actually an experiencer. She had experiences really from the very beginning. She's got an excellent memory, an eidetic memory, and like many contactees, recalls experiences from a very young age. So even before age one, she recalled being pulled up out of her crib, which may sound unusual, but I'm telling you, we've interviewed quite a few contactees who do remember that far back. And she had an experience when she was about 2 years old where she was missing from the house. Her parents could not find her. And they knew something was going on because this kept happening. And they called the police and they ended up finding her about 7 miles from the house at a local U-Totem convenience store. And Dolly, at that point, didn't remember what happened. She was still having missing time at this point. She remembered being taken from her home and put back, but that's about it.
And they couldn't figure out how she was able to leave the home and be that far away from the home or anything like that.
Exactly. I mean, she's 2 years old. She could barely reach the doorknob. And they started putting locks on the doors and the windows. They bought guard dogs. This did not stop her from disappearing.
What about, let me stay right there for 1 second before you continue on with that, Preston. So I'm wondering if they, did she have any type of physical, scars or anything physically wrong with her when they would find her after she had been missing for some time?
Not so much, not at that point. Certainly, they didn't notice it, but over the years, yeah, she's shown me some of the stuff. I mean, she has evidence of implants. Absolutely. She's had some really remarkable healings as well. So, yeah.
Where are the implants being placed?
Well, initially there was one near her ear, her left ear. She had one in her nasal cavity. She pulled that one out. She was a candy striper and knew a lot about medicine and actually dug in and pulled it out with a scalpel because it was irritating her and watched it sort of disappear in her hand. This is not uncommon that people who are contactees will go to the doctor or dentist, get x-rays or an MRI, and be diagnosed with what they call a foreign body, something that should not be there. So yeah, she definitely has one in her leg, one on her hand, which I've seen evidence of as well. So this is well-verified physical evidence.
This is stuff that they're seeing at her doctor, at her doctor's office,
yeah,
or whatever.
Freaks the doctors out. Yeah. Wow. They're like, what is this? What is in your hand?
Are they trying to get it out? Or what? Tell me what's happening there.
No, they've offered, certainly. Dahlia said no, because she knows what these are and what their purposes are. Been a lot of speculation about, you know, the purpose of implants. And, you know, people say, oh, it's for mind control and stuff. No, no. Early on, I started getting reports about implants and what they're for, and it was almost always health related.
You know what? I'm sorry to interrupt, Preston. I find that really, really fascinating that, you know, you have some people that want nothing to do with the phenomena at all. You know, they're having bad experiences one way or another, or maybe they're just not being it's disturbing when they're not even able to recall. They know that something has happened.
Right.
But they can't recall what's happening. So they don't want it to continue. She knows what's happening, and she knows that she's getting these implants placed throughout her body, and yet she doesn't want them removed. Is she telling you that her experiences have been good?
Oh, yeah. I mean, initially, and this is not uncommon, it was quite scary. I mean, she had an experience at age 14 that really woke her up to this, because she was having a hard time with it. She's like, am I crazy? I'm having missing time. What are these weird experiences I'm having at night?
Well, give me some detail. Like, when she was are they beings taking her from her room? And then she's, because I've heard, like, they're able to actually take people through solid objects. How in God's name that's possible? I don't know. But tell me about her. Give me some detail about, like, something she remembers, like, vividly when she was taken.
Yeah. What was the experience at age 14 that I'd love to cover? Because that's really what woke her up. She did see a UFO dropping down right in her backyard. This is in the Florida Everglades. She's 14. This was 1973, I believe it was. Yeah, 73. And she's like, oh my gosh, there it is. I've got to remember this. It's happening again. And it was so close. She could see portholes, and looking out the portholes, she saw gray ETs. And that's when she did get fear. And she dived under her bed as a room filled with light. And she woke up the next morning and did not remember initially, and was quite upset, because she had had missing time again. But she woke up and she was wearing someone else's pajamas. And she's like, wow, now I have proof. I don't even own these pajamas. They were on backwards and inside out. And she went into the kitchen to tell her mom, who did not like this subject, did not want to talk about it, had a lot of fear surrounding it, I think. And that's when someone came on the radio and started talking about UFOs in their area. It turned out two police officers not too far away had seen UFOs. So now she had two bits of solid evidence.
Was it because of what was happening to her? I mean, were people seeing the craft that was coming to get her, or what was happening there?
Well, possibly, it turned out, yeah. When she went to school later, she found out that her friend had seen UFOs on the same night. So she got more evidence. But what's important here is she's decided she's not going to let this one get away from her. And she sat down and meditated and was able to recall being taken on board and seeing grays. And she had a really prolonged and very positive experience. Yeah, it was quite frightening finding herself on board. She actually threw up. I've talked to other people who've had that same response. This can be really traumatic. And this is why I think some people label this as unpleasant, and they don't like it, because it can cause a lot of fear. But she overcame that. And when she did, this is when her experiences ramped up to a whole new level. And they actually taught her all kinds of stuff, including how to fly the craft itself. She asked them, and they said yes. So I know how that must sound, but I'm telling you, I've talked to other people who've had that experience. There's a new book out by another researcher, Grant Cameron. He's interviewed some 50 people who have been taught how to fly the craft by the ETs. And Dolly's case, I think, is the most extensive of them all, because she can describe it in great detail.
She can't. So she described what it looked like and everything, and the inside. And what is she? Hold on a minute before I go there, man. I can so make this a 4-hour interview. Okay, let's go back to her. Okay, so with females, you know, I haven't heard anything besides, you know, they're taking them because they have some type of interest in their female reproductive system. They're not doing that with her at all. I mean,
no.
Is she? What are they doing with her? Is anything medical of interest to these beings?
Yeah, and there's quite a bit of disinformation, I think, surrounding this, because it's absolutely true. People are taken on board. They're physically examined. Reproductive material is removed. And this is where people sometimes end their recall. It's so frightening for them. They shut down. They have missing time. They have amnesia. And that did happen to her. So that is one of the things that does happen when people are taken on board. But having interviewed hundreds of people and having interviewed Dolly, I can tell you with full confidence that really the main reason people are taken on board and examined is healing. They are trying to uphold our genetics. This is when the healing procedures take place. I wrote a whole book on this one, just healing cases, because I've documented more than 300 cases all over the world, reaching back about 100 years, no kidding, from most of the major researchers out there have multiple cases of healings. This is one of the main reasons people are being taken on board and physically examined. It's a health checkup. So that I think is an important point that is kind of overlooked a lot in the media, which likes a lurid and scary story, and will actually twist your words to make it sound negative when it's not. It really isn't.
Well, do you believe that some people are truly having a horrible, nightmarish experience with some of these beings?
Yes. But I'm going to preface that by saying this is their perception, that this is, because when you're in absolute terror, this is not fun. Nobody likes to go to the doctor anyway. And when you find yourself pulled on board a craft and you're seeing these grays around you, or different types, praying mantis, even human looking, many different types, little blue beings, tall whites, it can be very traumatic. But I can tell you with full confidence, having interviewed hundreds of people, I have zero reports of what I would call sadistic behavior, ETs intentionally hurting people, torturing, or all the horrible things humans do to each other. It's just not there. I've talked to people who had the same exact encounter in terms of the details of what happened to them. And one will say, this was the worst experience of my life. The other said, I had a good time. It was fine. And it has everything to do with the fear reaction, how they perceive things. Because when you're in fear, you do not perceive things accurately. It's very, very scary when people have this experience. And often people will have it repeatedly, particularly if you are a contactee. It's usually not a one-off. So by the third or fourth or fifth time, most of the people that I've talked to, 80%, 90%, come around and realize, oh, they're not trying to hurt me. That's the first thing they will say to people is, don't be afraid. Have no fear. No harm will come to you. So yes, some people do have a real hard time with this. I'm not going to deny that. It's absolutely true. But the vast majority of people at some point come around and realize, okay, they're not trying to hurt me. And this is when they really start to wake up to the true ET agenda and what's happening to them. They're here to warn us. They're warning us about nuclear proliferation, about our warlike ways, greed and corruption, the destruction of the environment. These are overwhelmingly the messages people get. And that's not negative. They're trying to help.
Well, let me throw this at you, Preston. And this brings to mind a series that I recently saw on Apple TV. It came through. And I think it's the new series David Pilatus has put together about people supposedly their disappearances are connected to UFOs. In some type of way, the UFO phenomena. But have you ever, you've never come across a case where a disappearance has been thought to be connected to a sighting? I mean, taken very seriously. I mean, he comes at it from a perspective where he actually believes that this is happening.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I talked to him directly. He's very thorough researcher. I think he's really brought some attention to this. I think that does happen, and I do have personal cases. There was a case involving a half dozen young men who would go out on vacation up in the high desert of Southern California. One of them had a cabin there, or his parents. And one of the guys, his name is Paul. I know his last name, but I'm not releasing it because of his family. He went missing, and all his friends were about to send out a search party when he showed up and said, "You're not going to believe it. I came across a landed UFO. They took me on board. They were very nice, almost human looking, but not quite. Had very pale skin, dark eyes, no hair, wearing jumpsuits," and told him that they're studying this area and invited him to go with them. Now, he declined because they said, "No, we won't be able to bring you back. This will be a permanent thing." He said, "No, I'm not ready to do that." And they said, "Well, we're going to be here next year on this exact day." And long story short, he ended up quitting his job, giving away all his belongings, and driving out there 1 year later and was never seen again. They found his car. Keys were in it. The gentleman I interviewed was one of the friends. He drove.
You got to be shitting me, Preston.
I'm not. So, yeah.
This dude actually said, you know, he thought about it. You know, I'm going to meet them back out there and I'm going.
Yeah, this does happen. Wow. You know, this I wrote about this in Dolly's case because she was on board when they pulled this lady on board who had been very badly burned in a house fire, and they healed her. And she says, "I don't want to go back." And they said, "Well, we don't normally do this, but in your case, we will allow it." And that's not the only case which Dolly has personally witnessed, involving homeless people or other people who were involved in tragedies where they wouldn't be missed and were supposedly dead. And I do have other cases of this. This is well known in the UFO community.
Damn, that's wild. Okay, so my question before I get back to Dolly is, this guy that you're talking about disappeared. What's his name? I mean, Ken, is that something we can look up and read more about his story?
Well, I do know his first name. I haven't released his last name out of respect for his family.
What's his first name?
Paul. Yeah, his first name is Paul.
Gotcha. And can you tell us what state it happened in?
Yeah, this was in California, Southern
California. Oh, yeah, California. Gotcha.
And it was a full-on missing persons case. His family was understandably devastated. So they went out there with all of his friends, and the police were called, of course, and everyone gave their testimony, and that's, "Well, this is all we can tell you. This is what Paul told us, that he was going out here to meet with them." So no one actually saw him being taken and going on board and so forth, but it's the most logical explanation given what he described 1 year earlier.
How old was this guy?
He was 21,
22. 20. And is this something that David covered in his special?
No.
Or no?
No, no.
Okay. All right.
No, there's a lot of cases of missing people. Far more than people realize.
And right.
Some, I'm sure only a small portion are attributable to people being taken on board UFOs, because there's all kinds of reasons people can disappear.
Yeah, you got that right. Strange ones too. Let's get back to Dolly here. I'm wondering, okay, so are you telling me that Dolly witnessed other humans inside these crafts?
Yes. Yes. This became one of her jobs, I guess you could say, because she's there when people are taken on board and being physically examined and given a health checkup and healed. And this became something that she was able to help them with. Because
What do you mean? What was she doing exactly to help them?
Well, people would have a very strong fear reaction. And she was able to walk up to them and say, "Look, you're fine. I'm human like you. Calm down. They're not here to hurt you." Because she says that, 80, 90% of people initially panic. Not always. There are some people who are delighted, like, "Oh, you've come again. I'm so excited." Children usually are much easier to handle. Teenagers, no. But a lot of people are taken on board. And they are much more comforted to see someone human who can explain what's going on.
Okay, what is going on? What are they doing? Why are they taking these other people? What are they doing with them?
Yeah, they're basically doing what they can to help us out. The contact phenomena is not anything new, but it really ramped up in the late 1940s when we developed nuclear weapons and had the capacity to destroy our planet. And we were basically facing an existential crisis. And this is when ETs did decide to step in a more overt way, and take people on board. And what it follows a pretty set pattern. Someone is taken on board and physically examined, healed if there's anything wrong. And if they don't have a strong fear reaction, because some do, and at that point they'll probably be sent home and have little memory other than a physical exam. But if they are able to react in a way that's not a full-on panic, they will take you down to the engine room. This is what they usually do. They'll give you a tour of the craft. They'll show you how the craft is powered. They'll take you up to what I would call the observation deck, or we'll turn part of the walls transparent, or show you the window and show you a star field, or the Earth far below, or the Moon, or the planet Saturn, or even another planet. I know how this sounds, but it's really quite common. They'll take you to the helm, the control room. This is what they did with Dolly. She's there when they do this with other people.
What is she doing? Did she say it was controlled by her consciousness? I heard that's how they do it, but you tell me.
Yeah, 100%. This is how people are able to fly the craft. These are very, very advanced technology. And the ship itself is what we would call alive. It's embodied by an entity. It's not at all like we have, you know, cars and planes here, which use propellants and are purely mechanical. These are partly biological, and they are flown. 100% of people report this psychically. So Dolly had to go through basically 5 years of training with the ETs on how to do this. And this is a big part of the onboard UFO experience. There's a really prominent spiritual aspect to all of this. People who have these encounters are profoundly psychic, and they will come away from their encounters with the ability to heal or do astral travel or past life recall and remote viewing, physical levitation. I did a whole study on that. I asked Dolly, I'm like, I don't suppose you've ever had an experience with physical human levitation. And she's like, well, actually, yeah. She wasn't going to mention it because it's so, you know, it's a lot for people to swallow.
You mean where she's physically levitated herself?
Yes. Yes.
Could she do it? And tell me, I mean, there's so much happening to her that it seems like someone else around her would have seen maybe something.
Oh, they have.
Or experienced something themselves. Can tell me something about that.
Yeah, she's had several people witness her levitation. Her mom, friends. I've been around her when poltergeist type activity goes on. I've watched it happen.
Like what? What happened?
A pan flew off the top of the refrigerator. And there was a couple of incidents like that sort of thing.
What? Okay, when she levitated, tell me about that. And why did she do that? Or did it... Is it something she controls or no? Tell me about that.
More so as a young girl. She had a really good handle on it, which is true for a lot of the contactees I've interviewed. As she grew into an adult, it happened less and less. I think the last major incident was witnessed partially by her dad when she fell down the stairs and floated all the way down and screamed, and her dad came running in. And saw that she had, you know, paint cans in her hand. She was painting. They were painting the basement. There was no way she could have, you know, gotten down the stairs without dumping those paint cans. He didn't see it firsthand, but her ex-husband watched her get really mad, and little objects off the shelf flew right towards him. He verified that to me. So yeah, I mean, I've talked to a lot of witnesses that corroborate her stories, which is pretty unusual because a lot of people I interview don't have a lot of evidence. They don't have photographs and films like she does. You can see the films that she's gotten on her YouTube channel. which is just one word, Dolly Safran. And you can see the evidence for yourself. She's for real.
Preston, you know what? That just reminds me when you said that the craft was alive. I know that I saw a remote viewing session with Courtney. And one of his remote viewers, or actually two or three of them, went and looked at the Baltic Sea anomaly. And they described that craft. It's a craft. That it was a craft that could actually still fly, and that it looked like it was alive, like it was not just, you know, a metal, you know, ship. It actually had intelligence built into it. So that jarred my memory there. I wanted to ask you also about the reason why they wanted Dolly to fly the ship, or they allowed others, you know, Dolly and the others that came aboard the ship. Was there a reason why they wanted them to learn how to fly the ship, or was it just to show them something, you know, teach them about themselves?
Right. No, it's certainly not just that. So that's certainly part of it, because she's able to assist them in pulling people on board and healing them. But ultimately, what it comes down to is our Earth is facing a real honest-to-God crisis in terms of our magnetic field is declining rapidly. And we are facing a situation where our sun is spitting out coronal mass ejections. We just had a major one last night. This is on the news. You can see it for yourself. So there's a real possibility that we're going to get a major event like the Carrington event of 1859, which will knock out our electrical grid.
And yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So if this happens, and according to Dolly, it will happen. And not only her, many other contactees are talking about this, and scientists. You can look this up. This is all verifiable information. But there may come a point, there will come a point, when our Earth is no longer habitable, and ETs will come down in large numbers and scoop us up. So this is why they taught her and many, many others how to fly the craft, so that when that day comes, she will be part of it and will open the doors and bring people on board. And I know, again, this must sound like science fiction to a skeptic, but I've interviewed a lot of contactees, and a good portion of them have gotten information about this, talking about how the sky will fill with UFOs one day. And it's their job to help people to reduce their fear and get them to get on board. Because this is a big event. This has been the message from day one from ETs, whether you're talking about the contactee era of the 1950s with human-looking ETs, or grays, or praying mantis, or what have you. The message has always been the same. We are facing some real tough times up ahead.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Preston, I've been hearing that in the news. That is a huge concern about our power grid going down. We'll be in a lot of trouble, some serious trouble. I wanted to ask you about the theory or the conspiracy going around that there's going to be some type of false flag event with a UFO type, alien type invasion that was being pushed by Stephen Greer. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I sure do. This is quite the buzz in the UFO community. I think there's a lot of evidence pointing towards this happening. You can see, I mean, in black and white, that our governments are pushing forth an ET threat narrative, which is simply not true. I don't think it's supported by the evidence. Yeah, I'm very concerned, because we do have technology that can mimic UFOs to a certain extent. And I think that's exactly what they're planning on doing, is faking an alien invasion scenario.
What about holographic technology? To make people think that it's, you know, a UFO, that could be possibly used. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. You can look this up online. There's some very famous footage of a gymnasium where the high school students are seeing a whale jump out of the floor, and you can see it looks real. There's advertisements all over the world where you can see cars driving out in full holographic technology. It looks 100% real. This is what's being shown publicly. So you know, hands down, our government has holographic technology that can mimic a UFO. I'm very concerned about it, absolutely. I think there's real good evidence that this is going forth. Just look at what happened this year with the balloons and the so-called UAPs being shot down, which weren't actual UFOs. I think our government is just doing propaganda and trying to do the beginning stages of this faked alien invasion. Don't believe it for a second. If one of these things starts shooting at you, you can bet it's government and not ET.
Let me see. I have some more questions I need to ask you, Preston. I want to know, has she been taken off planet?
Yes. Yes, she absolutely has. Initially, as a very young girl, she was having dreams of being taken to another world. I won't call them dreams, but that's how she kind of interpreted them initially, even though she knew they weren't, because she was awake. And she tried to tell people about them, but they did not believe her, and she herself was having trouble understanding it. But she would be taken to what she now knows, because she's been there many times, is one of the Grays' home worlds in the Orion system. It's got a much lighter gravity. The plants there are monstrous in size, very much like here with trees and birds and insects and so forth, but different and with minor variations. And they've taken her to many different planets. This is why we ended up calling the book Symmetry, because this was one of the lessons, one of the big lessons the ETs taught her, that there's symmetry to life throughout the universe, that we all share the same genetics. ETs are not that far removed from us. They have genes like we do. All accounts of ETs are humanoid. And this always puzzled me because some look just like us. And this is the message that they give contactees. They will say, "We are you, you are us, we are one." And when Dolly told me that, I had to laugh out loud because I'd heard it so many times. Yes, she's been taken to a number of different planets. They showed her one that was at the end of its life cycle. It's all about teaching. And they showed her how this planet was being engulfed by a star that was going nova. It took her there 4, 5, 6 times until it was no longer a planet. It got consumed by the sun. Yeah, she's got many examples of that.
And was it in the Milky Way or was it somewhere else?
No, it was in our Milky Way. Yeah.
She didn't call it a name or for this. What I'm asking is, I'm wondering if she's ever been taken somewhere that's actually been verified by astronomers or anything like that.
Yeah. In fact, that incident I was talking about where a star went nova, her ET contacts, Talada is the name of the entity embodying the ship. He's like, "Well, you need to look." This was like 2018, the Hubble telescope actually filmed a star going nova. That was the star they took her to. They basically took her back 80 million years in time. They have this ability to watch this from a distance, of course. And the Hubble telescope caught this on camera, on their telescopes. This was a well-known event. She watched it happen live. Well, so to speak. But yeah, this was absolutely seen by astronomers. It's a well-known astronomical event. So this has happened a number of times. We go into some depth in this in the book. It's one of many examples of this.
That's amazing. Let me see here. What else was going on? Did she say anything about hybrids?
Yes. Yeah. It's a tricky question because in a sense, we are all hybrids. I don't think we evolved on this planet. Certainly, this is what Dolly was told. No, we did not. I had come to that conclusion long ago, given that there are human-looking beings out there that look just like us. She herself did a genetics test and shows some unusual genetics. This is absolutely true with a lot of contactees. They believe they are hybrids. And there's is not at all unusual. So yes, this is part of the ET mission. They did suffer some genetic damage, the Greys, and this is why they do remove genetic material from people to reinvigorate and replenish their own genetics, which has suffered due to radiation, mostly gamma radiation. So yeah, they do create hybrids. Dolly describes having hybrid children.
So she has hybrid children. They've produced hybrid children from her.
Yes.
From her eggs.
Exactly. And
where are they?
They're living with the ETs. Yeah.
What do they look like? Did she describe them? What do they look like, Preston?
They're half gray, half human. She says they're quite beautiful. She sees these people, the grays, as people. She, you know, they have the same variation we do. We've got all kinds of ancestries here on this planet, and so do they. So they're not that far removed from us. They're much more like us than different. She has a son she calls Lloyd. He came to her once when she had broken her elbow, and he showed up and healed her. She says he's beautiful. He's very tall. He's got white hair. He's sort of a cross between a human and a gray. But they look very much like us. I mean, there are many cases I've interviewed personally of people who said the ETs they saw were hybrids and could have walked on Earth easily. They wore sunglasses and a hat. No one would ever know.
I heard that. That is really wild. I had another guest, another guest on the show that talked about that too. Like, he was studying their presence in Canada, which is just phenomenal. I love hearing his research. Are they communicating with her through telepathy? You never said that, but
yes.
How are they talking to her?
Yeah, they do have a verbal language. She is able to speak with them verbally, but yeah, the communication is almost always telepathic. She's still in telepathic communication with them, and this is basically the rule more than the exception. They will speak to people telepathically. It's the universal language, and doesn't matter where you're from, they can speak to you telepathically.
And my last question for you, for you, Preston, is you mentioned the poltergeist activity. Have you heard of that happening quite a bit? I know that I interviewed Kathleen Martin, who actually experienced that. Her family did after a craft came close to their home. They started having all this crazy, terrorizing poltergeist activity in their house. So can you tell me of some instances, if any, besides Dolly, where that's also happened?
Oh, yeah. I've run across that several times. You know, it comes both ways. I had two ladies, actually, who had moved into an apartment that was terribly haunted with poltergeist-like activity and had a UFO show up afterwards. One guy interviewed, he had a UFO land in his yard, then had a Bigfoot sighting, and then a poltergeist outbreak. I think what's going on here is that often contactees are woken up psychically. And their bioelectric field is suddenly strengthened and energized. And I'll just give you an example of one lady I interviewed in Mount Rainier, Washington. Had an onboard experience, went to work that day, and broke her computer. It just went offline. She went to the copier, and it went offline. She burned it out. She went to the fax machine, burned that out. People will blow up light bulbs. Objects will move around them. This is because it's them doing it. So when someone is a contactee and starts experiencing poltergeist-like activity, it is them who is doing it. Contactees will suddenly become have mediumship, the ability to do psychic readings, channeling, like I said, levitation, telekinesis, all of these psychic abilities. I don't like to call them paranormal. Really, they're normal. This is what we should be able to do. This is one of the main ET missions, is to wake us up to our own abilities. They're trying so hard to wake us up. We should all be telepathic. We should all have the ability of levitation and telekinesis and healing and astral travel. So I think that's what's going on here. I think that's what the connection is, honestly, with poltergeist-like activity following a UFO encounter.
Yeah. Every instance that I've ever heard as far as poltergeist activity is concerned, they always think that it's emanating from a human being. It's not like it's some type of entity that's actually doing it. You know, it's someone in the home that's causing it, which is really interesting. I just don't know, you know, why it's, you know, I mean, I know you told me your thoughts about why it's happening, but I'm wondering, you know, what exactly is going on there energetically that's causing a human being to throw off so much energy to be able to toss pans and throw, you know, just throw stuff everywhere, which is terrifying. You know, I mean, that'd terrify you. Just see something just happy. You know what I'm saying? Happening. You don't know why. And it's coming from you, you know, come to find out. So, wow.
Yeah. It's like uncontrolled mediumship is what it is, because we do have this ability. And poltergeist researchers learned early on that many of them do involve teenagers who have just gone through puberty.
That's right.
So it's really, yeah, it's us doing it. And the mechanics behind it aren't fully understood, but it just goes to show, you know, how much more connected to our environment we truly are, and that we do have the ability to do things that we don't fully understand.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Preston. That is happening. I believe if we could discover that, we could really just do it. All of us could do it anytime we wanted. But it's really fascinating, you know, that is happening, truly happening to people. This is my last question, because I should have asked it earlier. is Dolly always interacting with them in our dimension? Is she aware of herself being taken to another dimension with these beings?
It's a third dimensional experience. She's physically taken. She's not in her room. She's physically taken. They can't pull you out of the time stream. So she could have a 2-hour experience, a week long, or a month even. That has happened. And they put her back only minutes afterwards, or an hour. And she's had a couple of...
Oh, wait. You're saying they're taking... So they're interrupting her. They're stopping her time stream.
Not so much stopping it, but just pulling them out of... The time is not what we think it is.
It's almost like time travel. So they're kind of time traveling with her.
Yeah. In a sense, it could be described that way. I'm not sure that it's 100% accurate. But yeah, it's a physical experience. This is true with, I think, most cases. They can do interdimensional stuff. And that has happened to her. They've shown her stuff energetically. She's done astral travel with them. And so it's possible to go.
Meaning when you say astral travel, I just want everybody to know, our listeners to know, that when you say astral travel, it's where her physical body's still in her bed or wherever, but they've taken her energetic body and taken it somewhere, right?
Right. Well, not them so much as she goes voluntarily.
Oh, she does. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
But they do have that ability to travel into other dimensions. Certainly. Yeah. And they've explored that with her, but her experiences, by and large, are physical as we would think of it.
Can she leave her body if she wanted to, anytime she wanted to?
Oh, yeah. She's quite good at it. I actually learned how to do it myself, astral travel, and we've had some amazing adventures together. I showed up one day at her house, and I couldn't believe it. She saw me, because I've done this. You know, I've wrote a whole book about how to do it, astral travel. Anyone can do it. It takes a little effort, but it's not hard. But no one could ever see me, and she did. And then she showed up in my room as a full color golden apparition. So beautiful. So yeah, she can absolutely do this. She proved it to me. She can do stuff that I've never seen anyone do, like move objects and things. So yeah, she absolutely can. I've seen it. I've seen it happen.
I mean, she sounds so interesting, Preston. I can't wait till you come out with the second book to this one. The book is called Symmetry, A True UFO Adventure. Preston, they can get this everywhere. I'm sure it's everywhere with all your tons of other books. But tell my listeners where they can find more information about you, or reach out with any questions, or maybe see you when you actually go to other locations to speak.
Yeah, thanks, K-Town. I do have a website, prestondennett.weebly.com. All my books are there. If you want to read excerpts or reach out to me, you can contact me. My books are on Amazon. I'm all over social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I have a YouTube channel where I'm putting out my information, my investigations for those who don't have the time to read books. I think it's an important subject, so I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely, Preston. Again, the book is called Symmetry, A True UFO Adventure. Preston Dennett, my special guest. Preston, many blessings to you, my friend. I really appreciate your time.
Hey, it's been an honor and a delight. Thank you.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.